the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Rivalry Thursday. Welcome to Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. I'm here at West High School, where tonight the Rebels play host to Oak Ridge. It'll be the 11th meeting between the two schools, and half have come in the last 3 years. In fact, it was Oak Ridge winning a regular season and playoff game 2 years ago. The Wildcats won in 2018, and last year, after dropping the first eight in the short series, West got the win against the Wildcats in the regular season and then followed it up with a playoff win for back-to-back wins over Oak Ridge. So tonight, the 11th meeting ever between the Wildcats and the Rebels, and it'll be on Rivalry Thursday as the Wildcats have 8 wins against Knoxville West in their series, and the Rebels have won the last two. But we are brought to you today by OEB Law and our friends at Matlock Tire Service and Auto Repair. We have so much coming your way today. We'll have a Tennessee football practice report later this hour as Eric Kane will join us around 3:20. It's a cut-down race, the first of the playoff cuts. Saturday night in Bristol, Andy Jeffers will join us to talk about the storylines with the first cut-down. We have Ryan McGee of ESPN joining us to start hour number two. As we like to do, we'll catch up with Mark Packer of Rivalry Thursday around 4:20. At 4:35, we'll turn our attention to the NBA as the television voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers, John Michael of Fox Sports Ohio, he'll be on board to talk about the Final Four in the NBA. Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com for hour number three. We'll have your chance to win with a sports fix at 6, a conversation with West coach Lamar Brown, and more commentary from the University of Tennessee football program. But Jimmy Hyams, how are you today?
John, I'm doing great, and I know you're enjoying being on the site of these Rivalry Thursday games while I'm hidden out in my undisclosed bunker.
The super secret location continues to be the place to be for Jimmy Hyams, but every now and then he's you're just going to be amazed when he pops up somewhere and says, come see me, come say hello.
That's right. Oh, well, we've got a lot going on, John, and there's the some more news and notes. There's some notes about the Pac-12, notes about the U.S. Open. So we'll go ahead and get started with our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. So as far as the U.S. Open, let's go ahead and update it. So yesterday it was announced by the USGA that they were going to make Wingfoot, which is one of the hardest courses in the world, and as Tiger Woods said, it's tough even without them doing anything to it, that the course layout was going to be set up easier. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that meant. Probably pin placements, my guess is, but the rough is just absolutely brutal. It wasn't too brutal for Justin Thomas. He shoots a 65. Patrick Reed comes in with a 66. Get a load of this. Reed doubles bogeys 5, birdies 6, makes a hole-in-one on 7. Next thing you know, he's shooting a 66. What made it impressive beyond that, beyond the hole-in-one, he hit 4 fairways. How do you do that on that course with the brutal rough and you hit 4 fairways and shoot that? I will say this. I saw him hit one shot out of the rough where he wedged it up to about 3 feet for a par on one hole, and I said, well, maybe that explains it. But his play out of the rough was just incredible today. Rory McIlroy shoots a 67. He actually drove a par 4 and 3-putted, or he could have done better than a 67. Rory, wow. Sabatini. Now, get a load of this one. Sabatini is the last man in the field. Sam Horsfield withdrew because of the virus. So Sabatini got in the field, and he's 3 under after 11. He has certainly taken advantage of that. A couple of guys at 68, Brendan Todd, Harris English. We've got, Ricky Fowler's on the course at 2 under par, as is Bryson DeChambeau. He's through 7 holes, Fowler through 5 holes. Then I was watching Phil Mickelson. I think he birdied the first 2 holes, but he has just been all over the course with his driver. He started out hitting 3 wood. He then decided to go to a driver. He can't hit a fairway. And not only that, he's not even coming close to hitting a fairway. That's not a good sign. So Phil Mickelson, even after a couple of birdies, struggling a bit, he has won over through 5 holes. So Tiger Woods shoots a 73. He double bogeyed 18 when he chili dipped a chip on his third shot underneath the green. He had 5 birdies, and you think, man, if Tiger Woods makes 5 birdies, he's going to have a good round. Nope. 6 bogeys, a double bogey. The 73 is at 3 over par, and he hit only 5 fairways. So that's kind of a look at the leaderboard at this point with the U.S. Open. We'll continue to update it throughout the day. All right, some other notes out there. So I don't know this for sure, but it certainly looks like the Tennessee-Wisconsin men's basketball game is not going to be played November the 11th. As folks know, the NCAA Division I Council has recommended that you don't start until November the 25th. The Wisconsin game is November 11th. Tennessee's schedule makes it hard for them to find a way to wedge in the Wisconsin game. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it is rescheduled for next year. That's not finalized, but I think that's what's going to happen. Also, the NCAA Council said you can have no exhibition games and no scrimmages against other opponents. So that's the ruling out there. All right. The Mountain West said it is looking at playing in the spring. They do not have a desire to try to jump in there and play this fall like the Big Ten. But then the Pac-12, how about this coming out? So the Pac-12, the governors of California and Oregon, which have 6 teams in the Pac-12, they have come out and said, hey, you know what? You are allowed to practice. You're allowed to play games. We're leaving that up to the city or the county where those teams reside. How about that for an about face? So there is a chance the Pac-12 could end up playing this year. The commissioner, Larry Scott, said that if they do, that he's looking at late October or early November. Now, if they start in late October, early November, they're not getting in very many games, and I think it's going to be hard for them to get in the college football playoff. If, for example, they end up playing, maybe 6 games, you have maybe 5 or 6 regular season games, and you have a conference championship, I do know how deserving they would be. I don't think they would be deserving if you play that few. Although, I'll give myself a little bit of a hedge. Let's just pick, let's say Oregon wins every game by at least 30 points. Okay, maybe you can make an argument, at least if it's against good teams. But so maybe on the eye test you can make somewhat of an argument, but I don't think they're – I would give the Pac-12 2 chances to make the college playoff, slim and none, based on the fact they're starting so late. So we'll see what happens with that. Here's one I didn't know. Ed Orgeron, LSU coach, so he made the statement that most of his players have had the virus. He also said that once you have tested positive, you don't have to be tested again for 90 days per SEC protocol. I did not know that was SEC protocol. If you have the virus, you don't have to be tested for 90 days. Therefore, based on that, Orgeron is saying that he thinks all of his players are going to be ready to play for their season opener, which is against Mississippi State September the 26th. We've already heard Missouri say they're going to have 12 players out. I've tried to snoop around and check at Tennessee about whether they'd have any players out, and I don't have an answer to that. But with Tennessee having so many players that have missed practice in recent times, as it was mentioned by Jeremy Pruitt, at least 34 missed each practice over a 2-week period. It makes me wonder if Tennessee might be going forward without having any players, without having some players for the South Carolina game. We don't know that yet. That's an unknown commodity. Memphis, 46 active cases on 3,500 tests that were administered there. Ohio State guard Wyatt Davis, who said he was opting out and wanted to transfer, now wants to stay at Ohio State, and he's applied for a waiver to play to stay there. There was a U.S. Open note I meant to mention. There's a guy from Spain. His name is Edward Roussard. He's 20 years old. He's an amateur. How would you like to begin your career this way as on the PGA Tour? First U.S. Open, first hole, you hole out for an eagle. How about that for a start? I just might walk off the course. I'm done.
I was thinking the same thing. Just withdraw. Yeah. It's like it's not going to get any better.
That's right. So I thought that was a pretty interesting note right there. Just a couple of other notes out there. So Cincinnati Bengals president Mike Brown is going to miss his first regular season game in franchise history. He has virus concerns, so he will not be attending. Chris Godwin with Tampa Bay is in concussion protocol. He showed signs of that Wednesday. He got a tough hit by the against the Saints. Mike Thomas, Saints receiver, is doubtful for the game. He's got a high ankle sprain. They play the Raiders on Monday Night Football. And you've got – here's a note, too, and we've talked about this before at different times. You don't want to start in the NFL at 0-2. Here's why. Since 2002, 16 of the 216 teams that started 0-2 made the playoffs. That's 7.4%. So an 0-2 start in the NFL doesn't guarantee you won't make the playoffs, but by golly, you're behind the eight ball and trying to make the playoffs. So we will see. We will see there. And one other note I want to mention before we break. It's with the New York Yankees. So they get win number 7 in a row. They beat Toronto 13-2. They hit 6 home runs Tuesday, 7 home runs on Wednesday. The 13 home runs in 2 games is a record for the Yankees. It's the first time they've ever had at least six home runs in back-to-back games. And a guy named Kyle Nagashoki hit 3 home runs. He was hitting 169. He bats 9th in their lineup. He's the first Yankee batting 9th in the lineup to hit 3 home runs in a game. It's only happened 6 other times in Major League Baseball history, at least in the modern era. Here's the question. If you're the manager of the Yankees, do you keep him at 9th, or does he get to move up in the lineup after hitting 3 home runs?
I think you keep him 9th.
Yeah. Prove it. Kind of like when you're playing, horse in the backyard. You have to make the shot to win. Then you got to prove it. Well, prove it again.
Yep.
See if you can hit 3 more home runs. Then you get to move up. But that,
yes.
You just don't see it very often that the number 9 hitter in the lineup hits 3 home runs in a game. So pretty bizarre right there. So those are news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
And before we get a break, do want to give you – we've been updating and highlighting what has been a very special week in programming. We had the season debut of All Calls last night. After the starting 11 with Will West, Tuesday night we had the College Football Roundtable. And then tonight, Coach to Coach, week 3, that's with Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis. And then also tonight at 8 o'clock, it'll be In the Cage MMA Radio with Vince Ferrara. Tomorrow night, a full night of high school football. But as it certainly sent shockwaves through Knoxville and East Tennessee, and that is the incredible matchup, the opportunity that both schools said we need to take advantage of this. Central found itself without an opponent this week. Powell found itself without an opponent this week. Central, number 1 in the state, back-to-back state championships in 5A football. Powell, the only other 5A team that gets the first-place vote, the Panthers, the number 3 team in 5A football. They're playing at Central in Fountain City on Saturday night, and we are going to carry that as a special KOC game of the week. So we have Great. Our full night of high school football tomorrow night, but then it will be an awful lot of fun to be on hand when the Bobcats play host to the Panthers. Jimmy, what a matchup, and what about two schools saying, you know what, we've got an opportunity here, let's make this happen. I bet you 99 out of 100 times this wouldn't even come close to happen. It takes two special schools
to make this happen.
And I'm glad it's happening.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's great that we're going to be able to carry that game as well.
So we will have a special pregame coming your way at 7 o'clock with the kickoff at 7:30. But it's going to be a lot of fun when Central and Powell meet Saturday night on Joel Helton Field. But we'll get a break and be back with more. We will have Eric Kane join us for a Tennessee football practice report. That's next on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
I know it's hard to keep up, but we ain't slowing down. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. It's Rivalry Thursday, so I'm here at West High School, where tonight the Rebels play host to Oak Ridge. The program brought to you by OEB Law and our friends at Matlock Tire Service and Auto Repair. Jimmy Hyams continues to broadcast from a super secret location, and it's time for a Tennessee football practice report. As we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline to say hello to our own Eric Kane, his report brought to you by Pools by Heritage. Eric, how are you?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm doing well. Tennessee football crash report brought to you by, as you said, Pools by Heritage. And yesterday it was made known that Jackson Lowe, Tennessee tight end, has entered the transfer portal. Lowe did not appear in any football games last year, but he was a four-star signee in that 2019 recruiting class. He was actually the nation's number 12 tight end, and he has now entered the transfer portal. Again, you can enter the transfer portal, and you can come back if you choose. But he is no longer on the Tennessee roster on the Tennessee website. So Jackson Lowe is entered the transfer portal. So now you look at that position group that's already pretty thin. I mean, Austin Pope coming back but battling back from injury, not really a receiving tight end. And then you have Kristen Fant, Jacob Bourne, a local product, Jordan Allen, a guy that used to play outside linebacker, and Sean Brown is in that room as well. He kind of came in with Jackson Lowe back in 2019, and Deep Beckler's gotten a little bit of run over there as well. So, it's again, it's a position group that was already thin, a lot of inexperienced players, and you lose a guy in Jackson Lowe that might have been counted on for depth this year, but nonetheless, Jackson Lowe is in the transfer portal. It was made apparent this afternoon that South Carolina has named its starting quarterback. No, it is not sophomore Ryan Helinski. It is now Colin Hill. Colin Hill is a graduate transfer from, you guessed it, Colorado State, where he was coached by Mike Bobo. So a little interesting there. Thought that there was going to be a good competition to quarterback. Didn't know if it would be Colin Hill right out of the gate. But against the Volunteers, it looks like it won't be Ryan Helinski. It'll be Colin Hill. So that's the news here for today. Tennessee did not practice yesterday. Expected to be back on the practice field this afternoon. And Jeremy Pruitt is expected to meet with us, the media, via Zoom at 6 o'clock.
What were some of the things Coach Fulmer said on ball calls last night?
So Tennessee Athletics Director Philip Fulmer did check in on ball calls, the season debut, and he said the most notable thing that he said, kind of echoing what Jeremy Pruitt had said to us in recent availabilities, also what Jeremy Pruitt said yesterday in the Paul Feinbaum show, that pretty much Tennessee football, it's nearing the end of a stretch where it's had significantly low numbers in practice due to positive COVID-19 cases, and more so the contact tracing from those positives that have put a lot of guys into quarantine. So Tennessee's had about a two-week stretch where sometimes they've been without 40 to 50 players in practice. Hard to get ready for a season when you're missing that many bodies, and we've talked about that extensively. But that was kind of the most notable thing Philip Fulmer said yesterday on ball calls, that Tennessee is nearing the end of a stretch where you've had a lot of guys missing out of practice. So that means you're getting guys back, you're getting guys in practice, preparing for South Carolina, just as we are now 9 days away from game number one. He also said that he's very confident that Neyland Stadium will be a safe environment for fans coming into the stadium this year. Tennessee, again, is going to be 25% capacity. You're looking at a little over 25,000 fans into the stadium. And Phil Fulmer said that they've investigated, they've sought out every entrance, every exit way. They've put more sanitation stations into the stadium. And he's very confident that it'll be a safe environment for the small number of fans that will be coming to the stadium.
Also with Jay Graham, what did he say has changed about the running back position that he played for Tennessee back in the 1990s?
He said more so it's how important that position is now in the passing game. You look at guys like Alvin Kamara, where sometimes he can be the number one or number two receiver for the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, the running back is expected to play a role in the passing game now. Sometimes you're the fifth receiver if you have a four wide receiver set. It's just a position that you have to have a great understanding of the passing game and a great understanding of the route tree if you want to get involved. And he said that it's not just, you know, it's not just running between the tackles anymore, where that was a lot of what Jay Graham did and some of his teammates did back when they were at Tennessee, line up in the eye and run over the guard. But the incorporation of the passing game. And he said that Eric Gray is continuing to learn the concepts of the passing game. And not only do you have to learn what you're going to be doing on the play, you have to be learning what Receiver 1, 2, and 3 is going to be doing as well. And the more you understand those concepts in the passing tree, the more that these running backs will be involved in the passing game. And I think if there's no doubt about it. Tennessee, Ty Chandler, fans, and we've been kind of wondering why Ty Chandler has not been involved in the passing game more throughout his career here at Tennessee. He had a short stretch in 2018 where Tyson Helton got him in the end zone 3 straight games. They tried to throw the swing pass to him last year, but it never really worked out. But you got a guy like Ty Chandler, you can utilize him in the passing game, and certainly Eric Gray, who's elusive in the open field, and you just hope that those two guys can be utilized in that passing game. But on the biggest difference in that position since Jay Graham played it, it's certainly running backs being incorporated vertically into the passing game.
Also, Jay Graham said that he liked the maturity of a couple of the freshmen, Jabari Small and T. Hodge, and he said basically they can't treat them like freshmen. Those guys better be ready to play.
No, and that's the same for every freshman on this team. Again, depth is going to be such an issue, or depth is going to be such a key emphasis this year, more so than any other year, because you never know when you might have guys out for contact tracing, when you might have a positive test from time to time. So you're right, T. Hodge, Jabari Small, you can't just act like these guys are freshmen that are third and fourth stringers that might be getting in on mop-up duty or, down the line in game 7, 8, or 9 in a season where eligibility doesn't matter. There's a very real chance that one of those guys will enter game number one as the third string running back, meaning if one of these guys in front of them goes down, they're probably going to have a little piece of the offense there to give the other one a break. And he did say that both those guys are very mature and they're very much more mature than the average freshman, and that they work hard. They are listening to the older guys. It's been a big help the way they progressed during camp. He said that both of these guys have really good ball skills as well. So you can't treat T. Hodge, a local product, and Jabari Small out of West Tennessee like true freshmen, because they're going to be asked to do a whole lot more than most true freshmen will be this year. And that can be the same for a number of freshmen around the board. Pass rushing, Morvin Joseph, Tyler Barron, quarterback Harrison Bailey potentially at some point. Of course, wide receiver Jalen Hyatt is going to be asked to play a lot. And I do think as the year progresses, you'll see some Malachi Wideman, maybe some deep backs between tight end and wide receiver Jimmy Holloway, Holiday and Callaway. So, this is a year that where freshmen aren't really freshmen, and so you can't really treat them like it.
Any other news or notes?
That'll do it here for today. Again, Tennessee expected to be on the practice field this afternoon. Jeremy Pruitt will meet with us around 6 o'clock, and it'll be the last time we chat with anybody from Tennessee, assistant coaches, head coach, players, until Monday of game week, Monday at noon, when Jeremy Pruitt will have his game week press conference. So looking forward to that tonight at 6 o'clock. Today's Tennessee football practice report is brought to you by Pools by Heritage. You can beat the spring rush and get your pool started now, from design to construction to maintenance. One call does it all. Call Pools by Heritage at 947-7527.
Eric, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. And if you would, just a quick thought on tonight's Rivalry Thursday game, West and Oak Ridge.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Wes, we had them on the Rivalry Saturday Showcase back in week 2. It was for their first game when they played Farragut and just ran all over them. And it was so exciting to see Isaiah Mattress and that good defense. Baker Dance is now a senior quarterback. And so that team is really, really good. And Oak Ridge has got playmakers all across the board, has a big, daunting offensive line. So really excited to see Daryl Jackson get back into the fold as well. So there's going to be playmakers all across the board. Oak Ridge looked good last week, but ultimately it was just the nod of Matt White for Farragut. You couldn't stop number 20. And so Oak Ridge looking to bounce back, West looking to remain undefeated. I think it's going to be a great game. And, of course, kickoff will be on MyVLT 7 o'clock tonight for Rivalry Thursday.
Well, enjoy the heck out of it. Have a great call. And we sure do appreciate the practice report. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Kane with the Tennessee Football Practice Report. When we return, we'll head towards Bristol as Saturday night, it's a playoff race, the first cut down from the field of 16 down to 12. Andy Jeffers joins us next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
I'm VFL Charles Davis, and it's
9 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Sports
It's Rivalry Thursday. Sports Talk brought to you by Matlock Tire, as well as our friends at OEB Law. West High School, Knoxville West, Bill Wilson Field, the site of tonight's game as the Rebels entertain Oak Ridge in a key region matchup. And we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend Andy Jeffers from Sports and Entertainment Media as he's in Bristol. It's Bristol, baby. Saturday night, it's the first cut down from the playoff field, which will be reduced from 16 teams to 12. Andy, how the heck are you?
Man, it is Bristol. I'm excited to be in Bristol. It's a nice home race to have, but it's pretty cool that Bristol is hosting the first playoff race and elimination race. So you can't beat that. So Truck's actually the first playoff race tonight. Xfinity ends the regular season tomorrow night. Saturday night's the big one. So, I'm excited to be home, too.
I'll bet. And the fact that we do have a truck race tonight, it's a race night at Bristol. What has it been like to see Trevor Bayne climb into the trucks?
It's been cool. It's been nice to go up and down, on the grid right before a race. You get to see a local guy. So, and it's good to see him back. I mean, Trevor's such a great guy. And the business of this sport sometimes, it's not the nicest thing in the world. But Trevor being back, you can see the smile on his face. He's excited to be in the truck. And I know this is a big one for him tonight. But it's been good. I'm glad he's doing it.
Who do you like as far as the race on this coming up this week on the Chase? Who do you like? Who are some of the favorites that you see?
Well, Bristol, you always look at, first off, for the Cup race, Kyle Busch. I mean, he is the modern-day Darrell Waltrip here. And even though he's had a down year, you just never count him out at this place. This is a driver's track, and you can do tons of things as a driver that you can – get over the mechanical side at other tracks that you have to depend on. And so, Kyle Busch is one. You got to look just back at the All-Star race where, Chase Elliott, he walked away with $1 million and dominated that All-Star race and was, leading with Joey Logano. They took each other out in May for the points race, the regular season race. So, those two, even like I said, Joey Logano, you go down through there. Martin Truex has been very dominant on short tracks. And then you look at the Hail Mary. You look at somebody who's on the outside trying to get into that cut. Matt DiBenedetto. And he runs extremely well, loves Bristol. But him and Ryan Blaney both are in must-win situations on Saturday night. So those would be my favorites to look for.
How many advance to the next round?
So after Saturday night, it'll be 12. So we cut from 16 down to 12.
All right. And a number of them have already punched their tickets, but like you said, there are several of them that have to run well this week or they will be eliminated from the Chase, right?
That is correct. So, locked in already, Kevin Harvick won at Darlington, so you advance. Brad Keselowski won last week at Richmond, he advanced. Denny Hamlin, because of his points and such having a great regular season, he's already locked into the round of 12. So then Joey Logano, Martin Truex, Austin Dillon, Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, those guys are pretty much – they're going to be safe. Now, this is Bristol, so Chase and Alex can't have something disastrous happen to them right off the start of the race. But then you move on down to 9th through 12th. They've got Kyle Busch, Eric Almirola. If they have solid runs, they should be safe. They should be okay. But Eric, Kurt Busch, and Clint Bowyer, they're in the positive right now, but only by 7 points, 7 points, and 3 points. So, on the 13 through 16, William Byron is 3 points out. So that could flip easily here at Bristol. Cole Custer, he's 8 points out. That could easily happen. Matt DiBenedetto, like I said, he runs very well here. Almost had the win here last year for the night race, and Denny passed him in the closing laps, took the victory. And then Ryan Blaney, he could do it. But like I said, Matt DiBenedetto and Ryan Blaney are going to have to go out and win this thing.
Our guest, Andy Jeffers, as he joins us from Bristol. We had an opportunity last week, thanks to a very kind individual, to catch up with Bristol GM Jerry Caldwell. And as you've already touched on it, and so did Jerry, the Saturday night race at Bristol is a bucket list event, and you add to a year that, as unique as it's been, as challenging as it's been, Bristol has also been host to the All-Star race, and the night race is also a playoff race. Does it get any better at Bristol Motor Speedway than this season's been?
I'm telling you,
all
what,
things so considered.
Here's the best part of this. I am sitting here in the parking lot outside of our truck, and which is outside the track, and I am looking over on the campground area, and there's campers. That has not been seen in a long time, and that is awesome because the fans, there's 30,000 fans going to be here Saturday night, and the energy that, we had, I think there was like 25, 24,000 for the All-Star race. You felt the energy with the fans in the attendance, and right now you have fans out on the campground, and that adds to what makes this race so special. It's always been that notorious August race, but now this in the playoffs, it's just kind of ramped up everything. I think Blaney had a press conference this morning, Ryan Blaney, and I think his quote was, "I caution those in front of me, I'm not going to be behind me very long, because I will, if I'm faster than you, I'm moving through." That's the intensity of this race. And that's what's going to have to happen for those guys to come through. And I think when you put fans in these stands, it's just, that's the electricity. I don't care what sport it is. The fans are the electricity. And I think we've witnessed that over the last, 3 weeks with all the other sports coming back. The fans are the energy for this thing. So this is going to be exciting Saturday night.
Well, and if I remember what Jerry said last week, this is going to be the first Xfinity race that will have fans on hand since the return, right?
Yeah. So no fans tonight for the truck race. And then tomorrow, yes, Xfinity. I think there's Xfinity tickets still left from the last thing I was reading. But that's for Friday night, and that'll be the first one for Xfinity. And those guys, I mean, the drivers feed off that. They truly do. I mean, it kind of makes you go a little bit more. I think I mentioned one of the times I was talking to you guys, Kyle Busch feeds off that. When they boo him, he loves it. That is like his energy. And so that, it helps with everything. And then, and like I said, every sport, we've witnessed it with, no fans and stands and stuff like that. And the ones that you do, there's just a little bit of energy in those.
And then last week it was a Xfinity doubleheader at Richmond, and we had somebody sweep that doubleheader. What has it been like with the doubleheaders that we've seen, not only with NASCAR, but also now Xfinity?
Well, the Xfinity series, that was it. Now they have caught up with their regular season, and Justin Allgaier has just flipped the switch. That young man driving the junior motorsports car, he is, I think he's won three of the last six. And then this is his track too. He loves Bristol. I think he's led most of the laps in the last three races. So, those guys are finishing up their regular season tomorrow night. So that'll be interesting as they get ready. At Las Vegas next week will be the start of their playoffs. So it's kind of staggered a little bit between the trucks, Xfinity and Cup. But the Xfinity series, I'm glad they got back on track. Those races this year have been extraordinary, just with the young talent that is in the Xfinity series, chomping at the bit. They get a little eager sometimes and tempers flare. So good place for that here.
And if I took you back a few months and you saw the schedule that NASCAR laid out to try to get all these races in, did you think they could really pull it off as smoothly as they have?
I didn't, honestly, because of just all the stuff that you read about and all the stuff that was just gleaming and daring at anybody that was trying to get anything going for sports, right? So you just, how serious this pandemic has been. But the good thing is NASCAR embraced it, but also understood that, hey, I tip my hat. The reason we had NFL last week, I will strongly agree that it was because NASCAR back in May. I mean, they wrote the book for all these leagues and the networks. Fox, I'll give them credit too, because they came up with the plan, and that plan has been flawless. A couple of hiccups, here and there with some drivers, but for the most part, with as many people that are in the garage and how safe it's been, you know, the checkpoints, the, you know, every day I've got to fill out an app, and you have to do your temperature. You have to fill everything out as a safety precaution. NBC does the same kind of protocol. NASCAR does a protocol. You know, and yeah, it's a little busy, but hey, you're getting to work and we're getting to play sports. So I think all of our leagues, I think all of our production people across the board right now, I mean, I'm sure you guys are happy to have sports back. I mean, it is just busy, it's full throttle, and it's nice. But I think you'll do that. And so you will do what it takes. Major League Baseball, you look at that. They had some hiccups there at the beginning. But I think the teams finally realized, like, okay, we got to get our stuff together. We got to come in and take this a little bit more seriously. And they have. And look at it now. I mean, we're getting ready for baseball playoffs. And I think the bubble has worked in the NBA. So I think overall, if you take it serious enough, you can do it. And when this schedule was laid out, I was like, oh boy. But once you got into it, you kind of realized that, you know, hey, this can be done. And you got to be responsible and you got to be smart about how you go about things.
Even without qualifying, do you think the racing has been at a very high level?
Yeah. I actually think it's been a little bit more intense because, you don't know what you have. Now it's a testament to the teams and the engineers back at the shop because they set these cars up, you know, just on what notebook they have, and they've got tons of simulation they can do to see what the car, the tire, you know, the big curveball on Saturday night is. If you're coming to the race, bring a sweatshirt because it's going to be in the mid 50s by the end of the race, and that temperature change can play a huge effect on tires. Now it is concrete track, so it's not as much, but you know, those guys coming in without qualifying, you don't know what you have. And so, which makes it even more intense, you know, that first stage to see how these guys adjust and adapt. And I think without practice and qualifying, I think that's something that, you know, I think we'll move on. And even in 2021, I don't think you'll see qualifying or practice. I think there's a lot of money being saved by the teams, and that's a huge thing for them right now.
Andy, you mentioned that Kyle Busch is a driver kind of at the top of the conversation when you talk about Bristol. The fact that he doesn't have a win this year, how much of a wild card does that make him? Because that would be just like him to not be able to put together that fantastic run in a specific race, but then just take it all at the end.
I guess you remember, I guess it was about 5 years ago, right? Tony Stewart didn't have a win. Yep. Made the playoffs and criticized. It was like, We don't need to be in the playoffs. We're that bad. And went off and knocked out 5 wins and won the championship. Kyle Busch, it's, you know, everybody describes the setup of a race car and what you're feeling. If you're off just a smudge, your car is way off because everybody is in that competitive window. But with Kyle Busch, like a place like Bristol and a team like Joe Gibbs Racing, if they get everything dialed in Saturday and he wins, obviously you get the motivation and then you now you're rolling. And a guy like that could go into the playoffs, go to his home track in Las Vegas next week. Then, you know, it's just boom, boom, boom. He gets on a roll and then Kyle, I mean, he's the defending champ. So he can do it.
Andy Jeffers joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And, folks, when you see the in-truck or in-car camera, that's the handiwork of the man we've been talking to, Andy Jeffers of Sports and Entertainment Media. Enjoy the heck out of Bristol, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, thanks, guys, man. And, hey, you all have a great time getting to talk about sports, and, man, it's so close to football time in Tennessee. I'm excited.
9 days away.
Love it. I can't wait.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Andy Jeffers joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk today at West High School as the Rebels play host to Oak Ridge on Rivalry Thursday. We're brought to you by OEB Law and Matlock Tire as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If you smell something, that's probably us. We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. It's Rivalry Thursday. Tonight it's West playing host to Oak Ridge.
John, I want to go over the coaches' preseason all-SEC team. The SEC released it. First team on offense, Tennessee offensive lineman Trey Smith, no surprise there. And then Brent Simaglia as the place kicker, first team. On the second team, Tennessee linebacker Henry To'oto'o and offensive lineman Wanye Morris. So they have made the team as well. And then third team on defense is Bryce Thompson, Tennessee defensive back. So those are the Tennessee players that made the team. This is interesting. Jalen Waddle makes it as a wide receiver along with Devontae Smith, first team. He's first team all-purpose, and then he's first team on the return specialist. So it's like, okay, he gets all the he's good. He ain't that good, but he's pretty good. Anyway, he's first team in three different ways. The quarterbacks are Kyle Trask, first team. Second team at quarterback is Kellen Mond, and third team is Bo Nix of Auburn. So that's a look at the all-SEC preseason team that was just released earlier.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. Hour number two is right around the corner, and it starts with ESPN senior writer Ryan McGee. He joins us next on Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.